This week on Newsmakers, Dana White, the head of the UFC.
We're at a place where people can't even talk anymore, and if they find out that I'm friends with the president, I'm a MAGA piece of I mean, I'm talking to NPR right now, right? I talk to everybody.
A dialogue with Dana White about politics, culture, and masculinity on NPR's Newsmakers. Listen or watch wherever you get your podcasts.
So, figured out a way to pitch this?
We know books aren't exactly a new medium.
You know, a friend of mine once told me about a deeper bond with the product. Nostalgia. It's delicate, but potent.
Sure, but let's not overthink this.
He told me that in Greek, nostalgia literally means the pain from an old wound. It's a twinge in your heart far more powerful than memory alone. Books aren't a spaceship, but a time machine.
Spaceships? Listen, why don't we just tell listeners straight that it is called the Planet Money Book? It has a collection of some of our favorite stories with updates and tons of new original reporting. Plus, it's available in bookstores now. Wouldn't that...
Back home again, okay. To a place yeah. We know okay. We are loved.
This is Planet Money from NPR.
My friend and colleague, Bobby Allen, has been covering the bananas growth of prediction markets for NPR. You know, the ones where you can bet on everything from Taylor Swift's wedding date to the war in Iran. And Bobby says this craze has kind of come out of nowhere. Like a few years ago, when the CEO of one of the biggest prediction markets in the world reached out to Bobby.
Like, hey, FYI, might be worth like incorporating like some cow sheep prediction markets into your coverage. And I was like, a prediction what? Like, cow sheep? Isn't that a cereal?
The first thing that made Bobby think, wait, this may be a really big deal, happened last December. First, he saw Kalshi was partnering with CNN, meaning that CNN would be telling people the news and also telling them what people were betting on that news. And around the same time, people were actually betting on whether a famine would be declared in Gaza.
Those two things colliding made me think, like, what is this company all about? Who's using it? Why does CNN care about it? I guess WTF, how is this a thing?
Ever since, Bobby has been listening to Kalshi's proponents and its detractors and trying to sort out exactly what this company is doing, either for us or to us. And we at Planet Money, we asked Bobby to take us along on the ride he's been on, starting with the Kalshi traders he met when he went looking for them, where they hang out, in chats on Discord.
My account isn't, it's like Bobby176539, and there's like no photo. Like, I look like a bot, but it's fine.
Definitely not a narc. Bobby was thinking that these prediction market apps might be the next frontier of online gambling addiction. So when he first got on the Discord, he was asking around for stories of financial ruin.
And I got absolutely savaged for this, like absolutely savaged. Here walks in an NPR reporter who announces himself as an NPR reporter and asks, hey, I'm looking for someone who's like addicted to Kalshi and who like lost a lot of money. And they just utterly dragged me and were just like, who is this guy? You're calling us degens, which is like slang for like degenerate trader. Like you're just looking for a degen. You just want to ruin this industry. Like, what's wrong with you? Blah, 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 blah.
Bobby is actually learning all of this vocabulary as he goes. He starts keeping a glossary.
Degenerate traders don't know what they're doing and will lose their life savings.
So Bobby's like, okay, this is not a therapy group for losers. I get it. This was where the winners brag, where the whales are, what they call the sharps. No, not sharks, sharps with a P. Doing what they call printing.
The very active ones are extremely savvy, and they love putting in their Twitter bio, like, from 10,000 to 900,000 on Kalshi, right?
So Bobby's like, how are they winning so big? He starts asking people about what they call alpha, how they're getting an edge so they can predict the future better. Like, some people are buying powerful antennas so they can have a millisecond advantage listening to a press conference. And Bobby's trying to get them to talk by speaking to them in their own language.
I go, well, here's my proposed headline. Kalshi bond sharps turn to antenna maxing in search of market alpha, which is something that would never appear on NPR.org, but was a nod to like the way they speak. And one guy says, defo a hit. Another guy says, LOL, I think I like this guy. I hope somebody talks to him. He actually seems cool. Another guy says, I just DM'd him.
He's in.
What's your job history been like?
Yeah, so I graduated a little over 2 years ago.
So now Bobby is madly typing notes in his interviews, and he meets a guy named Logan Suddeth, who is 25 and last year quit his job at a private credit firm to do prediction markets full time.
Why did you leave? Did you get a new job? Are you doing trading full time?
I was making more from trading on Kalshi after work than I was from my job.
You're kidding.
Like more every month than he was earning all year at his old job, he says.
That's amazing, dude. Wow.
Logan's alpha is just research, research, research. He made more than $40,000, for example, on predicting Time Magazine's Person of the Year by analyzing what they were covering the most.
Okay. All right, Caden, what's your last name?
Booth.
Bobby found a guy posting about his alpha on a bet about how long it would take Charlie Puth to sing the national anthem at the Super Bowl.
I saw that Charlie Puth was in San Francisco like 3 days before. So I flew out there immediately, went outside the stadium.
But I was like, oh, this guy's a perfect example of someone who's willing to literally go the extra mile to have an edge that people would think would be unfathomable.
Caden Booth bought a stopwatch and this device used for listening to bird sounds and hung out on the sidewalk outside of the stadium waiting for the rehearsal to start so he could time it.
I thought I was going to show up here and there would be 500 people sitting outside. I really thought there'd be 500 people in lawn chairs all trying to make easy money. To me, I was like, this is just common sense.
And Caden did win many thousands of dollars. But where did that come from? And what is all of this predicting doing to us? Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Mary Childs here with NPR's Bobby Allen.
Hey, Mary, what's up? Never would have predicted we'd be doing an episode together, but here we are.
Okay. I also didn't predict it. The future's so strange.
Prediction markets are obviously great for the Cadens and Logans of the world who are making a bag, and great for the companies that run these prediction markets who are also making a bag. These companies exist, though, because they have convinced regulators that they're also great for the rest of us, that they're adding new knowledge to the world, making us more informed about the future.
And Bobby has been asking, is that right? Today on the show, the case Kalshi has been making to regulators, to the courts, and to the public as to why what looks like gambling and seems like gambling is not. We will hear why that argument has been kind of working and, if no one stops them, what prediction markets could do to our future.
This week on Up First, one trend emerging this election season. President Trump actively opposing Republicans he sees as disloyal and endorsing their primary challengers, who've toppled incumbents in multiple states. We're watching key primaries on Tuesday in Kentucky and elsewhere to see if that narrative holds up and what those races might tell us about November. Listen to Up First every morning on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So as Bobby enters this world of people who are saying prediction markets are the next big thing, a route to prosperity, to becoming richer, smarter, happier, he's like, the first step towards understanding all this hype is to try it.
Most people are downloading these apps right now because of sports. It's the only place you can bet on sports in all 50 states. So that's about 80% of what's happening on Kalshi. But then there's all this other stuff, like questions about what will happen in the world, in pop culture, and politics, whether a world leader will be toppled. Plus something called mention markets, capital M, capital M, where people bet on whether someone will or won't say something.
Bobby gave me a little tour through betting on mention markets, capital M, capital M.
And I did get clearance from Marianne and Alex to do this. That's our bosses
really?
At Planet Money. I'm not allowed to do a lot, okay?
All right, so under 20K.
The day we tried it, President Trump was about to give a very important speech that lots of people were watching about the war in Iran. So we decided to bet on which words he would say in the speech.
Okay, fund your account. How much should I put, 50?
Ooh, you're going to make some money. Or lose some money.
The app is very brightly colored and super engaging. There's charts all over the place. You kind of can't stop looking at the thing.
Okay, deposit now. I'm going to push the button. Ready?
Woo! You can literally see trades just flowing all over the screen in real time.
I feel like I'm in an arcade.
I mean, that's exactly the point. Yeah, you see the probability of whether a word will be said or not. You're seeing like a lot of numbers going up, going down, depending on how traders are betting.
Oh, wow. 95 for Epic Fury. Is he, I don't know, nuclear? People, 98% odds, nuclear. That's pretty good. Let's root for tariff. Do you think that's a good one?
A yes or a no on tariff?
Yes, tariff.
Okay.
I'm a yes on tariff. It's a low odds one. It's 17% only.
That's not great, but let's see.
But I think I'm right. I think he's going to say it.
As we speak this evening, it's been just one month.
Can you hear that?
I'm hearing it.
After Trump started talking, he immediately said like 15 of the words on the list.
And all these words on the list, by the way, they're known as strikes.
And he even said words that I had thought were pretty improbable, like Barack Hussein Obama.
Someone just said on Discord, holy yes fest.
It's a yes fest. Oh, should we just put more money down?
As we were watching, the odds of every word were jumping all around, and we just really locked in. Like, the world stopped. We felt like we were looking at this through a soda straw. Did he say our word? Will he? It becomes all your brain can think about. So when Trump starts talking about the economy, Mary's basically trying to goad him into saying the word tariff.
Our economy is strong and improving by the
because
day,
of?
And it will soon be roaring back like
because of? Before.
We are experiencing a very special kind of prediction market pain known as weaving.
Wow, he really almost said tariff twice. This is crazy. I'm so nervous.
He's really playing footsie with tariff over here.
He's really like just flirting with it. He's walking around it. Listeners, thank you for your faith in me, but I did lose $5 on my yes tariff bet. He never said it. Meanwhile, Bobby is a centimillionaire after months of betting on these markets just to figure him out.
Yes, and I'm speaking to you now from my PJ. It's very palatial.
And your first takeaway, Bobby, on your reporting journey is this feels a lot like gambling.
It does. It's a game, right? You get this dopamine rush every time you win. If you're losing, you want to chase your losses, and it's absolutely maddening. And there's always another market, Mary, the next hour. It just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes.
And this feels like gambling experience, Bobby is definitely not alone. As he is following the story, he's reporting on all these lawsuits where lots of states are also accusing Kalshi of being gambling. Some of them are trotting out a very basic definition, which in Merriam-Webster is the practice of risking money or other stakes in a game or bet.
In their early ads, Kalshi even portrayed itself like gambling. They were kind of cute about it, how they phrased it. They were basically like, bet on the NFL, legal in all 50 states.
And important note, all the existing online sports betting apps are currently categorized as gambling. And as Bobby gets deeper into this giant fight with the states over whether Kalshi is gambling or not, he realizes the whole existence of these prediction apps depends on the courts agreeing with Kalshi that these yes or no questions about the future are like derivatives, like swaps. A regular, degular financial instrument in which two parties with opposite views on the direction of some price or level agree to bet against each other.
So I started digging into that. I really wanted to understand the argument that Kalshi's CEO and co-founder has been making from the start in defense of these prediction markets. And that means I finally write him back and say, hey, Tarek, sorry I missed your message 2 years ago, but here I am. I think I'm ready to talk now.
Can you hear me well? I mean, well, I guess you can, yeah.
Yeah, that works. Actually,
the first thing Tarek Mansour always says about why Kalshi's not gambling, at least not like a casino, is that there is no house. He says Kalshi doesn't win when bettors lose. Instead, it makes money every time people bet, a little percentage of every bet. So their incentive is to have as many bets as possible.
Cha-ching.
And then the next thing he's always claiming is just because you're speculating about the future doesn't mean you're gambling.
I always say this, speculation is not equal to gambling. Because if speculation is equal to gambling, then our entire financial market is gambling.
Yeah, but I mean, if the comment section on NPR stories is any indication, Tarek, I mean, many people think this is gambling. I mean, they say, you're putting up money, you might win some, you might lose some, it's an uncertain outcome, that's gambling.
To me, I know my customers and I know what they're trading. And why they're excited about this is because at the end of the day, they're trading the same way they trade in the stock market. But in this case, they're trading on things that they care about and they can relate to.
And Tarek is always saying that it's better than regular financial markets. He says on Kalshi, your average individual trader is on a more even playing field with all the seasoned professionals.
Like the hedge funds and all these guys have all the information and, you know, there's no way to really beat the market in those places. But people have opinions about politics. They have opinion about culture. They follow and track the economy. They follow and track sports. And this is a mechanism for them to express those opinions.
The idea that prediction markets are basically democratizing the world of trading is a talking point Tarek has honed over the years. Because from the start, he had to convince the federal government that betting on all sorts of crazy stuff on Kalshi was not gambling, but something else. Technically, swaps. But Tarek often compares it to futures trading because, well, people are betting on future events.
Right. Oil futures have a ton in common with betting on the Rotten Tomatoes score for The Devil Wears Prada 2.
Yeah, that's currently at 87%. Interesting. What's really helped me understand Tarek's argument was to go back in time and look at all the ways Tarek has made his case that Kalshi should exist. It started way back when he was an intern at Goldman Sachs, around 2016, when he says he kept hearing about customers who wanted to bet on big world events.
They were all trying to figure out what was going to happen to simple questions about the future. It was basically,
yeah,
will Brexit happen or not? And will Trump win the election or not?
the answers to those kinds of questions, like will Brexit happen, mattered to them because they affect the market and the price of assets. And investors wanted to be able to bet on which way things would go. So Tariq thought,
okay, we have a market to price companies. We have a market to price commodities, like physical things that you can touch that are important to the economy, currencies, interest rates, like debt. And what if we built one to price simple questions about the future? Okay, well, what is the simplest way of creating that is like, let's just make it a yes or no questions where you can buy yes if you think an event is going to happen and no if you think it's not.
Right. So, you know, Tariq in his past life was, you know, a buttoned up Wall Street type, not exactly Gordon Gekko, but you know what I'm talking about. And so he really wants to make betting markets the next thing in the long line of futures, starting with grain futures, the very first futures to be traded almost two centuries ago.
Which, by the way, people also thought was gambling at first.
So Tariq goes to the regulator of the futures market, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, to ask permission to be able to run an exchange, a marketplace.
The whole idea of futures, for farmers, for instance, is to avoid feast or famine cycles, to smooth it out. So you can buy futures to lock in future prices in case there's like a drought that knocks out all your crops. It's a way of hedging against something that might threaten your business, like an insurance policy on your crop.
And also, when they're doing what they're supposed to do, futures help everyone figure out how much things should cost. Or, if you ask Tariq, they can help predict the future more accurately. Like, they could be a tip sheet about what's going to happen.
Instead of people guessing whether Brexit was going to happen or not, now you have a more objective source of, like, more objective, unbiased source of signal on whether Brexit was going to happen or not.
And more noise. But Tariq is trying to turn his idea into a marketplace. And in order to get designated as just another futures or swaps market in the long line of them, the CFTC says Kalshi has to check a bunch of boxes. Like the market cannot be easily rigged. No insider trading.
Insider trading. Bad. Kalshi submits lots of paperwork about this. And in November 2020, at the very end of President Trump's first term, Kalshi gets a call from the CFTC informing them that they have won regulators over. In Kalshi's press release, they wrote that it was, quote, the next natural step in the evolution of trading on future events.
But that was just a first step. Once Kalshi was allowed to exist as a marketplace, the company also needed to get approval for every new market it wanted to list. Meaning, if Kalshi wanted to put up a market for people to bet on how much rain will fall in Chicago next week, they had to get permission.
And this was just as President Trump was ending his first term and the much more skeptical Biden administration was taking over.
So during these first few years, Kalshi was hearing a lot of this one word, no, because the CFTC had rules. Any market on its exchange had to be insider trading proof, and it had to have what they called public interest value. Like the way a market on oil futures or employment data or inflation might inform how corporations make decisions over travel or hiring or firing. And also, the law strictly prohibited any markets to do with terrorism, assassination, war, and gaming. And that last one, gaming, that one ended up being important for Kalshi. Because at first, that was a real issue for Tariq. Like, back then, this gaming restriction meant that he couldn't list sports.
And also lots of other events that seemed to the CFTC to be like games. And this was frustrating to Kalshi's traders. So Tariq decided to fight it.
In 2023, Tariq proposed Kalshi's first election market, a market for betting on what party would take control of Congress. Regulators blocked it, as expected. They said election betting is gaming. It's not allowed. And that it would open up elections to interference, among other things.
But this time, Tariq sued. His lawyers argued there's no rule specifically against betting on elections, and this market would do what futures do best, you know, hedge against harmful outcomes and provide more predictive data.
In their court papers, Kalshi referenced a whole academic experiment from the 1980s, where economists at the University of Iowa accepted bets on the 1988 presidential race. And it was more accurate than polls at the time. The wisdom of the crowds prevailed.
And Kalshi's lawsuit prevailed too.
The courts did weigh in, you know, and they agreed with our legal position that these markets are legal. They are allowed.
And that was a rocket booster for you guys when you guys
Absolutely.
Sued your regulator and won. Yes, that was huge for you guys. That really opened the floodgates.
Yes, it opened the floodgates. It majorly boosted the rocket, all of that.
And here's the thing. Once Kalshi got permission to list election markets, they interpreted that approval to mean they could list all kinds of markets, not just who will win a political race, but sports, the Golden Globes. Will Ariana Grande's streams be up on Spotify next week?
And it isn't just that ruling that opens the floodgates. It's the huge political shift that comes next.
Because the Trump family actually joins in on the love fest. Donald Trump Jr. becomes an advisor to Cauchy. The CFTC's default setting changes. They go from default rejecting to default accepting, no matter how outlandish the market is.
So that's basically where we are now. This is the reality that Bobby has sorted out during all these months on Discord chats and on calls with CEOs and following all the court battles.
Prediction markets are ascendant. Cauchy is out there trying to pull in as many people into prediction markets as it can, recruiting on college campuses, advertising all over subways. But I mean, every time I log on to work, I see my inbox absolutely full with lawmakers really incensed. Many people are trying to tear all of this down.
That's after the break.
Why do some of us feel so tired and other people seem to have endless energy?
What we've discovered is that different people have very different kinds of mitochondria. And some people's mitochondria seem to be quite a bit better at flowing energy.
That's on the TED Radio Hour podcast. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Over the last month, Tariq's team of PR handlers has been pushing him into the spotlight. He's making the rounds as the public face of Cauchy and all these prediction markets. And he's essentially saying, yeah, there's this big legal debate happening, but listen to me for a second. These prediction markets are actually really important to society.
Like Tariq keeps saying, at a time when no one seems to trust anything, these markets can be an accurate crystal ball, a truth machine. And, he says, they are better than polls. Betting, having skin in the game, makes the wisdom of the crowd even wiser. And he says, prediction markets even make people better, more engaged citizens, like the opposite of social media.
If somebody is very careful about their belief, they will make more money and do better on prediction markets than someone who has bad takes and extreme beliefs, right? Whereas that's not true for social media. Like in social media, someone who has a very nuanced, smart take gets 5 likes. Someone who says something crazy on social media or racist will get 300,000 likes.
I know, all of my most brilliant tweets get no likes, so like I totally relate.
So that's why you should be on prediction markets.
Oh, trust me, he is.
Yeah, it's all for the sake of journalism, I swear.
I actually think prediction markets are a force for good because the incentive structure for prediction markets is rewarding the nuanced, the unbiased, the well-calibrated takes.
In my little mention market betting experiment with Bobby, though, that is not what we found. Like, were we more engaged citizens when we were listening to that speech on Iran?
The Korean War lasted for 3 years, 1 month.
Duration of
and
wars.
Days.
Did not have the that
Vietnam
in my bingo
War
card. Oh, this is the bingo card.
19 years, and essentially.
This feels pretty gross, really no Bobby, I will say.
You stop absorbing the content, future. And you're just literally just like hearing the words as like,
the power
as like a cherry in the slot machine. Like, are you going to line up 3 cherries? Are you going to hit the jackpot?
And he's over here talking about obliterating and decapitating an entire country, which is full
of
people.
Tonight,
every American can look forward to a day when we are finally free from the wickedness.
Now, how we feel about all this is immaterial. It has nothing to do with whether or not Cauchy is legal. And after months of Bobby talking to all these people involved in Cauchy, not involved in Cauchy, watching it, worrying about it, he has basically concluded that Cauchy is working this legal loophole of being governed by derivatives law instead of gambling law. Like, this is gambling, it's just buttoned up and in a suit.
Yeah, and having covered tech startups for years now, this whole, like, we're not this, we're that argument is something you hear over and over. Airbnb isn't a hotel, it's a people-to-people marketplace. Uber is not a taxi, but a transportation network company. And now Cauchy is saying, we're not gambling, we're this other thing.
I think that they followed the playbook of many in the tech industry.
That's Amanda Fisher, former chief of staff at the SEC.
I would say crypto paved the way for this, which is that the disruption...
Sorry, Amanda, my dog's barking. Sorry, one second.
And this is Bobby's dog, Cammy, who's a good dog.
I first came across Amanda dragging the prediction market bros on the app formerly known as Twitter. She's now at a very pro-regulation advocacy group called Better Markets. Amanda says Cauchy's path to success has taken a page from another financial sector that bobbed and weaved its way through complicated legal obstacles.
They use the playbook that the crypto industry, I think, started and perfected during the Biden administration, which is framing their disruption of industries as a technological disruption when I would characterize it more as just a legal disruption. They are willing to take more legal risk and break the laws and essentially take the approach of catch me if you can.
But Amanda's take is that prediction markets are not doing the things futures markets are supposed to do,
which is to facilitate corporations in the real economy fostering price discovery and creating jobs and creating stable markets and not for just gambling and speculation.
Amanda says the fact that these prediction markets are getting rubber stamped by the federal government as basically futures trading, that's giving sports gambling apps ideas.
Some of the sports gambling apps are themselves launching their own prediction markets, trying to get approval as futures marketplaces. Their execs are publicly admitting it's a way to get sports betting into states where it is not legal. So Amanda posted this week, at least they're being honest.
One of the things Amanda is out there warning people about all the time is how understaffed and uninterested the current CFTC is when it comes to monitoring whether these apps are following any of the official rules, like insider trading. In the stock market, which is regulated by the SEC, where Amanda used to work, she says it's pretty easy to get caught using insider access to win big. The SEC has like 8 times the staff of the CFTC.
I would highly advise people do not insider trade in the stock market. There are a lot of surveillance tools and cops on the beat, at least during an administration that is predisposed to enforcing the law. I do not have similar confidence in prediction markets.
Because prediction markets are partly responsible for policing their own services.
There is a self-policing mechanism that was written into the rules back when futures markets were all focused on grains and soybean prices and such.
It is fascinating to me the degree to which the CFTC sort of outsources regulation to self-regulation, right? What's up with that?
That's absolutely right. So in the past, markets were pretty simple. It wasn't every day that a financial intermediary would try to list a new type of grain future or soybean contract.
You're saying they didn't envision markets on whether the supreme leader of Iran would be ousted.
Exactly. Right? They were basic markets in pretty boring commodities. So when Congress and the agency set up this market, that self-policing structure maybe made sense.
Now, Amanda says, you have prediction markets like Kalshi applying the same self-certification tool to all kinds of markets that it was not intended for. They're also supposed to be policing their own traders to make sure that they're not manipulating markets. But Amanda says she's not seeing any serious enforcement. What she hears instead is executives at these prediction markets talking about enforcement when big, fishy-looking wins make the news.
So the capture of Maduro in Venezuela or the Iran strikes or any other policy announcement related to tariffs.
People have been making suspiciously well-timed bets on these kinds of events, but they are very hard to pin down as insider trading.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, just this week, I was reporting on these French sleuths who figured out that there was probably an insider trader on Polymarket who made a ton of money on President Biden's pardons in like the final hours he was in office. But it took them weeks to untangle all of this, and we still don't know exactly who was behind the bets.
Now, Bobby was a philosophy major in college, and he says he hasn't read Simone de Beauvoir or Kant in a long time. But during these whirlwind months reporting on prediction markets, he has found himself falling into a big existential wondering about these prediction markets.
We. As I stroke my chin, I've been wondering, how much are these bets on future events changing the future?
When parties acting in their self-interest maximize their own gain over that of the public, in philosophy and economics, this is known as sinister interest. It's attributed to philosopher Jeremy Bentham in the late 1700s. And you can already see this happening.
Yeah, I saw what some might call sinister interest in the real world recently. I was watching a mention market where people were betting on what words a Federal Reserve official was going to say in a meeting about the crypto industry. It was on Zoom. And when the officials were taking questions from that Zoom, I saw Kalshi traders submitting questions as if they were just regular humans trying really hard to get the official to say something they were betting on.
And it can get way more ick. Perhaps the most stark example. Prediction market bettors threatened a journalist over his reporting on the Iran war, saying that they would kill him if he didn't change what he'd written about a military strike.
Now, Tarek has told me he's aware of the dangers and there are markets he would never list.
Yes, I mean, there are limits, right? Like I always say, taken to the extreme, things can be bad. But like any markets that can create a perverse incentive, we avoid.
What's a perverse incentive, you might be wondering? Well, maybe a bet on California wildfires. Like, how far will this fire spread? That could encourage someone to set a fire.
But the problem is, in practice, the prediction market companies themselves are the ones deciding what markets may have perverse incentives. And Polymarket, they did have markets on the LA fires last year.
So I've actually gone back and talked to all those big-time prediction market sharps in the Discord chats to ask them if they were worried about all the potential reality warping and insider betting on almost any future event. And some of them are like, we're not that worried about it. But others are like, I don't really see how Cauchy's claim that this is a net plus for humanity really checks out at all.
They try to say like, oh, you know, it's really important to have like these numbers from prediction markets to like accurately gauge things.
This is Evan Semet, who told Bobby he's been making close to $100,000 a month on Cauchy. So you might think he would be pretty game. But,
you know, does the general public really need something that's like 1% more accurate on like the, I don't know, like whether or not someone's going to score like over a certain number of points in a football game? Like what value does that actually add? I would say like none, like literally none.
I talked to one trader yesterday who said, you know, basically like they have so much on the line financially in terms of prediction markets sticking around that whatever party, whatever candidate wants to let them thrive, they're going to back. Is that like your number one thing or is it a top thing or?
No. So I like, okay, maybe this is like bad for me to admit or whatever, but like, I don't think prediction markets are like a good thing socially. I think that there is like an actual like pretty real dark side to prediction markets. These markets are only profitable for people like me because there are people just throwing away money. I think that's probably pretty bad, to be honest.
Evan's bad vibes, though, are not stopping this industry.
It seems like every day there's a new lawsuit or court ruling over the future of Cauchy. Nevada has recently banned Cauchy. In New Jersey, meanwhile, a court struck down a ban. It'll all probably end up before the Supreme Court one day. But in the meantime, the rocket ship that is the prediction market industry keeps soaring. This past year alone, 70 new prediction market companies have started. And the industry is projected to be a $1 trillion industry in the next 4 years.
Bobby, should we make a bet on it?
Hey, Mary. Mary Childs.
Yeah?
We want to play something for you.
Hi, Mary. It's Dilip Singh. Currently vice chair at PGIM, former deputy national security advisor for international economics under the Biden administration, former head of the markets group at the Fed, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm calling because I heard you're leaving Planet Money.
Oh, my God, Mary, you're
that's
leaving.
That's really too bad because I was just about to cave to that interview you've been chasing me
I
on
I literally
for
have
months.
Been pounding this guy.
Well, onwards and upwards for you. Congratulations, and please don't forget about the rest of us.
This is the meanest thing.
Congrats, Mary. We all love you.
Thank you. It's true. I am leaving Planet Money for a new project. Details to come. Joke's on Dilip, though, because I'm absolutely going to be following up. This episode of Planet Money was produced by Samuel Horskessler. It was edited by Marianne McCune, fact-checked by Sierra Juarez, and engineered by Sina Lafredo. Alex Goldmark is our executive producer.
Special thanks to all the Cauchy traders I have been hounding for months. Speaking of hounds, thank you to Cammy the dog.
Good dog.
I'm Bobby Allen.
And I'm Mary Childs. This is NPR. Thanks for listening.
Why do some of us feel so tired and other people seem to have endless energy?
What we've discovered is that different people have very different kinds of mitochondria. And some people's mitochondria seem to be quite a bit better at flowing energy.
That's on the TED Radio Hour podcast. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.